It is Monday, February the 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us. Coming up, reformists set to win big in Iran's elections. Also ahead, choosing the next U.S. president.
I'm tired, and you're tired, of guys like Little Rubio, who, you know, little mouthpiece, goes like a mile a minute. You were tired of these people. They're never going to get anything done.
A Somali town rocked by explosions, plus the latest from the world of movies. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Reformists and moderates appear to have taken all 30 parliamentary seats in Tehran, according to unofficial election results announced Sunday, marking a resounding vote of confidence for Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. Rouhani and former President Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani also are leading the race for membership in the Assembly of Experts. That's the influential body which monitors the work of the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who has final say on Iran's foreign policy, and the Assembly of Experts could also be charged with naming the next Supreme Leader. For some analysis of all of this, VOA's Victor Beatty speaks with Alam Payan. He is director of the Middle East Studies Center at The Ohio State University, who says the vote was expected to go the way it did.
By most of us that who study Iran from a close range, that this election will be an election that probably the reformists will come on top, and that really happened. It's really stunning that the 30 seats of Tehran, they were all almost won by the people that who are allies of this Hassan Rouhani, the president of Iran. Well, these elections were for two bodies. One was that the Iranian parliament, which is Majlis, and another one for this the Assembly of the Experts. The Assembly of Experts, there's a possibility that probably that Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, who was the former president long time ago, so probably about 16 years ago, so he will probably replace Ayatollah Khamenei, who is now 76 years old. So that's one, which is the Assembly of the Experts, which is 88-member body. But still, we do not know who these other members will be, 87. But now it is clear that that the parliament and they have defeated the members that who were elected, those that who were conservatives and did not want to open up Iran's relationship with the West. So the reformers are the ones that who want to really have relationship with the West revived.
Mr. Rafsanjani, that you mentioned, said on Twitter on Sunday, quote, "No one is able to resist against the will of the majority of the people, and whoever the people don't want has to step aside." Rather bold words.
Yes, it is. I think it was 1989 there was a conference in Iran, and I went there, and we had an audience with Rafsanjani at that time. So he looked reformist even then. So it is still that this guy is still, I do not know how old he is right now. But he was regarded as one of the people that were more open to open Iran to the West and revive the economic relationship, because Iran was suffering then and Iran is suffering right now under the sanctions.
I wanted to ask you about the nuclear agreement. There is some suspicion in the West that Iran will not hold up its side of the bargain. With this election result, does that change at all?
I think it would change. I'm certain that the agreement that which Iran has accepted almost most of the conditions put by the United States and the United Kingdom and France and Germany and Russia and China and others. So probably Iran will be more open to accept those conditions. And if the reformers are winning because of reviving the relationship with the West, then probably that we may take it as a trend, unless something drastic happens inside Iran or some from outside, maybe. It seems right now to me that these are positive steps which have been taken. inside Iran.
Well, according...
Well, no one could expect it that all 30 seats surrounding the Tehran, the capital of Iran, that would be won by the reformists.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Nearly 60% of Iran's 80 million people is under the age of 30. Is this a vote of the young people of Iran?
I think it's both. It's the young people and their parents. We all know the demography in Iran. You're absolutely right. It's a very large group of them are younger people. And many of them are influencing their parents, just like our kids do in this country. The younger generation is more educated than their parents. They have access to the social media. They listen to CNN and MSNBC, even Fox television in their countries. And they know that in other countries there is an openness and they elect their representatives and there is democracy and that sort of thing. They cannot keep that Iranian society closed forever. So this reform is something, these reformers are winning. Because Iran, we saw that in one or two elections before this one, that people they came to the streets and it was the power of coercion and suppression that they were suppressed. But the Iranian people are just like any other group of people, educated people in other parts of the world, that they want openness and democracy and education and economic development in their countries.
Alam Payan is director of the Middle East Studies Center at Ohio State University. He also told VOA's Victor Beatty the Iranians might have turned a corner in terms of progress toward better relations with the West, but he warns that could change if either inside or outside obstacles occur.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its military.
You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With a landing on
and
civilians.
Sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
With all that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
An unidentified aircraft attacked a convoy carrying suspected Islamic State fighters near Bani Walid on Sunday. There was no confirmation about who carried out the attack and whether there was damage or casualties. U.S. officials say U.S. aircraft were not involved, although both U.S. and the Eastern Libyan administration are known to have carried out such attacks in the past. Western officials have expressed growing concern about the presence of IS fighters in Libya. A French report last week said French special forces with backing from U.S. and Britain were engaged in attacks against the IS group in the North African country. Two explosions happened, huge ones on Sunday, rocking the center of the Somali town of Baidoa, that's 245 kilometers west of Mogadishu, killed at least 13 people. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the militant Islamist group Al-Shabaab has taken responsibility for similar attacks in the past. The explosions come just 2 days after two massive explosions killed 25 people in the capital Mogadishu and wounded nearly 60 others. Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for those attacks. Meanwhile, Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud called on leaders at a security summit in Djibouti to commence offensive operations under the banner of the African Union against Al-Shabaab to, in his words, take back the initiative. He said the focus of the attack should be Al-Shabaab's logistical and training centers. A British nurse who had to be hospitalized last week in London for a third time since contracting Ebola in Sierra Leone was released from the Royal Free Hospital. Pauline Cafferkey, who became infected with the deadly virus in 2014, has received treatment for meningitis as recently as last October. Although her case is considered unusual, the World Health Organization has warned that the effects of the Ebola virus can linger in certain parts of the body. An Ebola epidemic 2 years ago killed more than 11,000 people, most of them in West Africa. Nigeria's finance ministry says it has saved the Kashmir government millions of dollars by removing more than 20,000 ghost workers from the payrolls. The ministry said Sunday that nearly 24,000 non-existent workers were removed from the government payroll after an audit, saving more than $11 million a month. Corruption and mismanagement have long been stunted development in Africa's biggest economy and stopped oil producers and are now exacerbating the impact of a sharp fall in global crude prices. Since President Muhammadu Buhari took office last year vowing a crackdown on graft, the government has been working to cut the cost of running the government rather than slash jobs to help tackle Nigeria's worst economic crisis in years. And, of course, there's always more news at our website. That's voanews.com. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Susan Yawkey of VOA's International Edition. VOA's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of some of the world's greatest experts on international issues. But you don't have to tune in at broadcast time. Listen when you want. Just go to voanews.com. Click the Programs tab and scroll down to International Edition.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. Turning now to U.S. political news, where former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton won a major victory Saturday over her rival Bernie Sanders in the South Carolina primary that solidified her status as the Democratic Party frontrunner. Clinton benefited from huge support from African-American voters, an advantage that could carry well into several of the upcoming Super Tuesday's primaries on March the 1st. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more now from the VOA News Center.
Thank you so much, South Carolina!
It was an exuberant Hillary Clinton who addressed supporters in South Carolina after a sweeping victory over rival Bernie Sanders.
There is no doubt in my mind that America's best years can be ahead of us. We have got to believe that. We've got to work for that. We have to stand with each other. We have to hold each other up, lift each other up, move together into the future that we will make. Thank you. God bless you, and God bless America.
Though voter turnout in South Carolina was light overall, exit polls showed 60% of the Democrats who did vote were black, and they overwhelmingly backed Clinton. That advantage could also pay off in upcoming Super Tuesday primaries in Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and Virginia, all of which have large black populations. Speaking to supporters in Minnesota, rival Bernie Sanders vowed to fight on in the Super Tuesday contest when 11 states hold Democratic primaries or caucuses.
Men and women fought and died for American democracy, and we are going to revitalize American democracy. We are going to have a government which represents all of us, not just a handful of campaign contributors.
The Republican presidential contenders also shifted their focus to the Super Tuesday contests in a race that has grown increasingly bitter and personal. Republican frontrunner Donald Trump went after chief rival Marco Rubio during a rally in Arkansas.
I'm tired, and you're tired, of guys like Little Rubio, who, you know, little mouthpiece, goes like a mile a minute. You were tired of these people. They're never going to get anything done.
Rubio has stepped up his attacks on Trump as well at a rally in Texas.
It's time to pull his mask off so that people can see what we are dealing with here. What we are dealing with here, my friends, is a con artist.
The sharper tone comes on the heels of the latest debate that featured a slew of personal attacks between Trump, Rubio, and Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who hopes to beat Trump in his home state on Tuesday.
One of the things that's becoming clear is that our campaign is the only campaign that has beaten Donald Trump and that can beat Donald Trump.
Super Tuesday is the biggest single primary day in the election calendar, with hundreds of delegates at stake for the presidential contenders from both parties. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And in the run-up to Super Tuesday, VOA's Carol Castiel and our congressional correspondent Cindy Sain speak with veteran Democratic pollster Stanley Greenberg about his recently published book. It's called America Ascended, A Revolutionary Nation's Path to Addressing Its Deepest Problems and Leading the 21st Century. Here's Carol Castiel.
Well, certainly, Stanley, you're the author of the book, and in contrast to a lot of gloom and doom and pessimism we've all been hearing from many on the political right, you, on the other hand, are an optimist.
I am indeed, because the deeper you look, the more you see not just this new American majority, and that's where the politics is focused on, but when you ask the question, where does that majority come from? When you look at the growing diversity, you look at the growing urbanization, it's not just a millennial revolution, there's also a metropolitan revolution within migration. All our historic trends have been reversed. High-tech, energy, innovation, renewables, all coming together, and particularly immigration, that's the biggest change taking place in the country. All of it comes together to make a very dynamic country, but it's very big disruptive changes that are making America ascended economically and culturally exceptional, because as you look around the world, there just are very few countries that can welcome immigration. You may not believe that if you listen to Donald Trump, if you listen to the debate in the Republican Party, but you should ignore that. You won't ignore it, and we'll talk about it. But the real story is that the country more and more accepts immigration. It's a bigger and bigger part of America. It's part of what makes us culturally and economically exceptional.
And Stanley, that leads us to ask you then, why do you see a brighter future for the Democrats instead of the Republicans? How does this benefit the Democrats?
Well, I think we're watching an endgame. I think we should focus this on an endgame. We have a Republican Party that, with increasing intensity and with increasing evidence that they're losing, waging a counter-revolution against these huge trends. They're only accelerating. Every minute, they're accelerating in the country. They're battling against those trends. And this is an evidence of losing, not winning. And so on every measure you look at, open to immigration, just look at the issue of Syrians allowing, Syrian immigrants into the country. The data suggests the country was split 50-50 on whether you should welcome those, Syria after, the San Bernardino events, where, Americans were killed by ISIS-motivated individuals. The country was split 50-50 after that on allowing people to come here and settle here. And so we should step back from the Trump rhetoric, and look, I think, at the real trends.
I have many more questions, but first let me turn to my colleague, Cindy.
Well, since we're on the subject of Mr. Trump, I will keep up with that. It is clear that Donald Trump has made illegal immigration the centerpiece of his campaign, saying if he's elected, he would have the estimated 11 to 12 million undocumented immigrants in this country rounded up and deported. What are you hearing from voters? How do they rank the immigration issue and importance to them for their vote in 2016?
Immigration is the consuming issue for the Republican Party, and they've waged, decade-long struggles at state level to try to keep immigration from continuing and to force the federal government to be much tougher in regulating immigration. But they haven't been successful in that, and the courts have mostly thrown out what they've tried to do at state level. But it's an intensifying effort. Began in California, went to Arizona, went across the states that Republicans won in 2010. And so immigration is a central issue. It's one of the most important issues for the – it's why I thought at the beginning when Trump emerged, when he ran on immigration, because the elites have been trying to be quiet about it, because they know the trends in the country. So the kind of the established, party and the elites know that this is a no-go. The Republican Party can't be electable as a national party if it's running against immigration. But within the Republican Party, there's deep frustration that the elites haven't stopped Obama, haven't stopped the pace of immigration. And that's why it's so central for Republicans, but not in the rest of the country. If you ask millennials, by almost 2-1, they think immigration is good for the country. Right now, they're quite accepting. And you have to accept just the size of the coalition that we're talking about, that's emerging, that accepts immigration. It's likely to be over 60% of the electorate are groups that accept immigration. So this is an endgame. This is a battle. People are losing the war. That's why they're so intense in their views.
Stanley Greenberg is a veteran Democratic pollster. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Castiel, host of the program Press Conference USA, and Cindy Sain, our congressional correspondent. You can hear more of their conversation by going to our website, voanews.com, and look for Press Conference USA under the Programs tab. And while we're still on the U.S. presidential race, let's look at what's being said online and social media about a controversy surrounding Donald Trump. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here with the story. Hi, G.
Hi, Steve. Trump got caught in this web of controversy about a white supremacist group support. The Ku Klux Klan is a movement in the U.S. that advocates white supremacy and anti-immigration. The group engaged in terrorism against ethnic minorities throughout the American history. Now, it all began when the group's former leader, David Duke, expressed strong support for Trump.
And I remember that, but it's the reaction to that support that caused a bigger commotion, didn't it?
Exactly. Trump had an interview with CNN Sunday morning, and during that interview, he flat out refused to condemn the group or Duke's support for his presidential campaign. When he was asked to clarify his response, he kept saying he has no knowledge of either the former leader or the group itself. When the internet exploded with people condemning his response, Trump sent out this tweet. As I stated at the press conference on Friday regarding David Duke, I disavow. So it's worth noting that it took him a whole weekend to disavow what many people perceive as a violent hate group.
And what are other candidates tweeting about all of this?
As you know, at this point, his biggest rival is Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and the two have been verbally attacking each other for some time now. Rubio tweeted, "We cannot be a party that nominates someone who refuses to condemn white supremacists and the Ku Klux Klan." On the Democratic side, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was quick to respond, sending out this tweet, "America's first black president cannot and will not be succeeded by a hate monger who refuses to condemn the KKK." Surprisingly, his rival retweeted that, which garnered many positive replies from both the Sanders and the Clinton campaigns. It's interesting to note, however, that although Sanders has a long history of supporting the civil rights movement, Clinton continues to be more popular among black voters. That's all for me today. Steve?
And many thanks to you, G. That's our own social media guru, G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And you can follow International Edition on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
About 8 years ago, a pair of astronomers were going through some archival data gathered by a radio telescope when they discovered a mysterious and powerful burst of radio waves that lasted only a few milliseconds. Astronomers at Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia detected another of these fast radio bursts last April and alerted other observatories to their discovery. Soon, a number of radio and optical telescope facilities around the world joined in the search for the signal. After examining a visual image of the FRB, taken a day after the first burst, scientists think they've found where it came from. It may have originated at a location in an elliptical galaxy some 6 billion light years away. Some of the scientists involved in making the finding are also suggesting that these fast radio bursts could generate gravitational waves such as those detected recently by the LIGO Scientific Collaboration. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. You know, the sequel to one of the most popular foreign language films ever, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny, just opened. A new one out there, International Edition's David Byrd has the story.
Fans of martial arts films will have plenty to celebrate when the long-awaited sequel to 2000's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon opens in IMAX theaters and on Netflix. Michelle Yeoh reprises her role as Yu Shu-lien, who is charged with protecting a powerful sword known as the Green Destiny. This film takes place 20 years after the end of the original. Yeoh said at the film's premiere in Los Angeles that she has been waiting many years to delve back into the supernatural martial arts world of Crouching Tiger.
And I think what was most
satisfying was that the general audience, you know, the big audience, embraced this this culture, this Chinese culture, this wuxia world, you know, that we know so well. And we've always wanted to share it with, but it's not easy to suddenly accept seeing warriors being able to fly with a single bound and, you know, leap across rooftops and things like that.
Ang Lee directed the original, which went on to win an Oscar and earn $213 million at the box office. Sword of Destiny also stars Donnie Yen of the Ip Man martial arts films as Silent Wolf. Harry Shum Jr., known for his role as Mike Chang in TV's Glee, also stars. Shum, who was born in Costa Rica but grew up in the United States, says that the original Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon helped him learn more about and draw closer to his parents.
My parents, when they moved here, you know, they were heavily influenced, obviously. They're from China, and they love Chinese films. And, you know, I was kind of, when I grew up here, I was an American boy that knew how to speak Cantonese. But that was the defining film that kind of bonded us together to watch the same entertainment, you know, the same film.
Sword of Destiny also stars former Olympic rhythmic gymnast Eugenia Yuan, the daughter of martial arts legend Chung Pei Pei. Shuya Chang and Australian newcomer Natasha Liu Bordizzo star as well. Bordizzo says she did have some martial arts experience, but it was nothing like the Wudang art form used in the film.
I do. I have a black belt in Taekwondo, but it has no relation to Wudang, so I really am just a beginner student like everyone else with Wudang, I think. Yes. I mean, Taekwondo is like, Wudang is like crazy dance, so they're really different. I mean, it's like comparing tennis and like basketball.
Fans of the original can look for more warriors flying across landscapes and over buildings. But some fans who want to see it in IMAX might have to look for it. Many U.S. theaters are balking at the idea of releasing the movie on IMAX and to Netflix subscribers on the same day. Netflix says the idea is the wave of the future. Theater owners say it cuts into their business. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And Sunday night, Hollywood's biggest stars attended the 88th Annual Academy Awards Ceremony. That's the movie industry's highest honors. For all the winners and losers, go to our website at voanews.com. Thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. So good to have you with us today. A reminder, the top world news is straight ahead. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope that you have a great Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and the Coca-Cola Company have announced support for a new program in Nigeria under the Water and Development Alliance, also known as the WADA Project. The $2 million project will provide up to 100,000 citizens in Cross River State with access to safe drinking water and good sanitation facilities by 2019. This joint investment is aligned with USAID and Coca-Cola's shared focus on clean water provision as a means to help build healthy, sustainable communities in Nigeria. The U.S. government is committed to engaging in effective and innovative alliances with committed partners to support Nigeria's critical development needs, said William Stoyer, acting U.S. Consul General in Lagos. We are proud to collaborate with Coca-Cola to bring a sustainable and safe water solution to thousands of people in Nigeria, he added. During the signing event, USAID Mission Director to Nigeria, Michael Harvey, said, "Today we are consolidating a special partnership, one in which a private firm has joined with a U.S. government agency to contribute to a priority set by the government of Nigeria." USAID and Coca-Cola have collaborated in Nigeria since 2007. The partnership has improved water resource management and expanded sustainable access to safe drinking water and sanitation services in Kano and in Enugu states. The WADA project helps to control and prevent water-related diseases such as cholera, typhoid, and diarrhea by providing water and sanitation services, hygiene education, and establishing water environment and sanitation committees in communities where the project works. This new agreement will provide a framework to implement WADA and to allow the parties to establish a range of policy issues to achieve their shared objectives in Nigeria. The United States is proud to work with Nigeria and its international and private sector partners to give the Nigerian people better access to something all human beings need, safe drinking water.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.